Hey dudes, HW here. Little disclaimer on this podcast. I meant to talk about tone. I somehow went down a tangent of talking about the coronavirus, personal responsibility, and just a very existential kind of reasoning about taming wild things I talk about, and also just how to create order in chaos, in the chaos in our lives, in our mind, outside ourselves. This one got very sort of... I think there's some good stuff, but if you're just looking for tone, I'm putting up two episodes back to back. The second one's going to be about all the tone stuff I meant to talk about, but this one ended up just being me ranting for 47 minutes about life and things and stuff. So enjoy. This is episode 80. Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie Podcast. My friends, we're here together. It's episode 80. That's John Cordy playing us in. Mahalo, hey now, in honor of all the greats. I had a slow start to the Monday. Got up a little late, but Mondays and Tuesdays are the days we decide what the rest of the week will look at. Look like. Amen? Can I get an amen? He's preaching. HW's preaching. Mondays and Tuesdays, those are the days. Go kill Monday and Tuesday. Go outside, beat Monday and Tuesdays over the head with a club. Drag it back to your cave. Feed your family. Get what I'm saying? Provide security for the rest of the week. Get out there. Get ahead of what you need to do. I got a lot to do, but I thought, you know what I've been neglecting? The Tone Junkie Podcast. Well, no more. Not this week. This week, we don't do it. We don't neglect it. I don't want another week of neglecting the Tone Junkie Podcast, so we get on it. Last week, I was successful. A video every day on YouTube. Content every day on Facebook. Delivered what I thought was a really good demo of the 66 Tapus. You don't think I miss the Sues? I miss the Sues. The man is a muse. The Sues is a muse. I miss him. I want him to play the guitar again. I want him to come back and be on these demos. But you go watch this 66 Top Boost demo and tell me, HW, come on. Come on. You nailed it. You nailed it. I know. The streets have no name tone. Killer. Then somebody in the comments was like, nah, it's a little dirty for the streets have no name tone. It's like, bro, this is one of the... This sounds incredible, okay? It's a little dirty and the motto's a little off. Now, I mean, the context is like, I spend exactly 20 seconds dialing in a Streets Have No Name tone. It's close enough. You know what I mean? I haven't listened to that song in probably several years. So he's probably right. But anyway, Goldie sounds great on there. Ah, leave me alone. I don't know who that is. Somebody calling me up. Don't got time for it. But man, I'm resolute to do it again this week. Every day this week, another Tone Junkie video on YouTube. Have you been seeing it? Are you checking out the YouTube and the Facebook? Because we're killing it. We're killing it, you guys. We're killing it. Had the Banverb pack out last week. Then we sat down with the 69 Banverb. And you know what? I'm a man of the people. I let people tell me what they like and don't like. 69 Banverb, people didn't like that video very much. Why I love 69 Banverb, not a lot of people watched it. But you know what? Then I pull out the Kemper Cello, Infinite Sustain, Direct Mix Trick. Come on, 5,000, 2,500 views. That's good for Tone Junkie. How I make performances? Let me just break it down. Here we go. Let's learn about the Kemper. Plus, I got that new Trini Lopez. Did a killer Top Boost Vox video. Not as many people actually into the demo, but that's okay. It's not as grabby of a title. Then let's get ambient on the Kemper. Just trying to provide some value here. You know? Coronavirus or no coronavirus, we're trying to get good tone, and we got a lot to talk about. And so this week, listen, this week I'm resolute to do this. We are going to have an incredible, incredible pack at the end of the week. I got a ton of stuff I'm trying to get. I have been stocking them on some amps. I got some incredible amps. I'm trying to profile the world, make some great Kemper content every day this week. Plus, this week we are not neglecting the podcast. Get ready. The podcast is here this week. I'm talking multiple episodes. I'm talking multiple. How many should we commit to? Yell it out. Tell me. I can hear you. Go ahead. How many? Listen. Okay. Okay. That's going to be tough. That's a little bit tough. Okay? Because I am really trying to keep up. And, you know, what happened to me basically was at the end of Friday, I got into a fight with my wife. I got into an argument with my wife, and she was like, "You are being too hard on the kids, and you need to chill. You need to walk away for a minute." And I go, okay. And we got into it, and I sometimes I need my wife to like kind of come challenge me and argue with me. Because listen, we're going to get into it. You see a dude here who's like really chill, wears a lot of floral. Bro, I wear a lot of floral. And I am chill. I'm very chill. But there are certain things I take very seriously. And we'll get into that. I actually got something to say about taking life a bit more seriously in this time. So let's get into that. Okay. I got into this issue with my wife because she was just calling me out, and I needed her to challenge me on this because she was basically saying, you know, you're being this way, you're not being this, and you're, you know, and I'm going, okay, you're right. But I needed her to like point it out to me because what I had to realize was, okay, you are exhausted. You have gotten 4 hours of sleep several nights this week in a row, and then you like had an all-nighter, and you're sleep deprived. And little things were making me really annoyed. Little things were setting me off. Things that should just be like, whatever, just a little issue, just deal with it. Things that are not a big deal at all. All of a sudden, I was just reacting too much to them. I was overreacting to them. And so you got to bring yourself back and go. And that's why you saw the post last week where I said, what am I doing? What am I actually doing? Right? What am I doing? We should all ask ourselves this question. What am I doing? What am I actually doing? Am I profiling the world? Yeah. But what am I actually doing? I'm choosing to believe something for this season in my life. I'm choosing to believe this. I'm choosing to not let fear govern me. I'm choosing to not believe in scarcity. I'm choosing to not believe the voices in the back of my head that say, HW, if you're going to work this hard, you should do a different business that scales. You should do a business with a larger market. You should do something more profitable. You should go back into just marketing, and you should just do that. Okay, but I'm choosing to believe this. I'm choosing to believe something I know to be true, which is you're going to be the best at the thing you love. And I'm choosing to believe that I can secure the financial well-being of my family, that I can be a provider. And I'm choosing to believe that I can do that even when the world is melting. And I'm choosing to believe that ideas like generosity, ideas like empathy are so good for life. They have to work in business. So what am I really doing? You know? What am I really doing? Well, I'm trying to model for my kids. Go after it. Do what you love. Go after it. Just be happy. Think of others. Prefer others. Like, not this negative. That's easy. It's easy. You know? Conspiracies are easy. You know that? Conspiracies are easy because I saw someone post this and just got me thinking this morning. It made me think. Conspiracies are easy because you would. It's easier to believe in a conspiracy. It's easier to believe in the Rothschilds. It's easier to believe in the Illuminati. It's easier to believe that someone is in control when the world is actually chaotic. The world is actually chaotic. It's orderless. And there's swirling movement, and there's these animals. It's like that book, Where the Wild Things Are. I read this book to my kids. There are these wild things, forces. There's this economy, and there's this mass group of people, and there's a virus, and there's worry, and there's actual animals, and there's weather, and there's what you're doing for you, and there's what's good for everybody, and then there's what's good for me, and what's good for my family, and what's good for this city, and but then sometimes all those things can be at odds with each other or at odds with what's good for the nation. There's these perverse incentives that exist in everything. Okay, let me bring back something that makes sense here. There are these wild things. And they're powerful. They can be useful. They can be good, but they can harm and destroy. They can be reckless. And it largely in some way is our job to bring a little order into our sphere. So when I see the world doing this, I go, well, are you going to profile the world or not? And I'm not doing that because it's important. It's actually not that important whether I make Kemper profiles. What's important is that I tame a beast, is that I bring order where there isn't some around me. That I fence off an area of the world. And I say, I will command you. I will control you. I will take dominion over you. You are the safety of my loved ones. Now, I can't control if something comes in there that's beyond my scope. But I can stop them from being exposed to danger. I can stop that. So let me give you a practical example. I can choose to make sure my kids' learning is not thrown off by making sure my wife, who's taking the reins of their education now, has everything they need. I can choose not to abandon their Montessori school, which is a community of people who believe in this type of Montessori education. We just think it's a good method. We think it's a good method that rewards kids in curiosity. And it's a method that I saw really work for my son, who was far behind in reading in kindergarten. I mean, he was halfway through kindergarten not reading at the level. I mean, and the school said, listen, we're not worried. We have a plan for this. So what's the plan? They said, well, listen, Oliver was behind in math and reading when he got to kindergarten. We said, yeah, we thought so. They said, yeah, he was. They said, but what we saw was, he really enjoyed the math and the spatial learning stuff. So we didn't force reading on him. We believe that he is going to learn best by allowing him to pursue his interests. So we didn't fight him and make him stop doing something he was interested in so that he could do reading. We see he's behind. But he was behind in math too. But now he's at grade level with math and with the spatial puzzle things that he was doing. So they go, so we don't want to fight the kids. We want to let him go. But now we need to steer him towards reading. We need to steer him towards language because we do need to get him further advanced in reading. So they said, we're going to work with him. So they adjusted the curriculum because they said a lot of the curriculum that we have here that the beginning stages is more designed for the brain of a 3.5 and 4-year-old, not a 5-year-old. So if we have him go too far back and start from the beginning, he was reading, but he was just loose with some of his letters. He kept writing letters incorrectly. He kept mixing up a couple sounds, and he had problems sounding things out. And it was so weird. He would sound out the word. You know, he'd sound out his name. Oliver. But in his brain, he couldn't hear that he had just said Oliver. And then he'd get frustrated. And I'd go, what does that sound like? What word is that? I don't know. And he'd get really frustrated. And I'm just looking at this kid going, it's okay. Your brain just doesn't. We're going to build the connection, man. Chaos. We will build order. It's fine. We'll build order. And in this, we'll learn how to deal with frustration. We'll learn how to deal with the chaos in your mind first. And when we've mastered that, we'll go outside ourselves. Shoot, man, the chaos in your mind, though. That's everything, isn't it? It's amazing how nothing can change outside of us, but we can affect our emotions. We can change what's in our heads. We can feel better and worse about a situation, and the situation doesn't actually even change. Just how we feel about it changes. Don't believe me? Talk to a woman. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ollie caught up. But so look, that's chaos into order, right? His little brain couldn't do it. And then we as parents have this panic. Oh no, he's not going to be okay. I'm worried for him. Teachers are like, don't worry, but listen, it's fine. We're going to come alongside the child. We're going to reward them. He's going to keep excelling in math. So then he gets out of kindergarten and he's at math. He's at reading level of kindergarten, but he's further in math. I go, hey, this is a good place to be now. All of a sudden that summer, this dude starts reading like a madman. He discovers Dog Man, Captain Underpants, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, reading like my son's read more books than me. I don't read books. You guys see my typos. I can't. This brain is just. I don't have time to write things down. I don't have time to read. Now, I'm really lucky there. Because I read things. I don't read books. I read all the time. I'm constantly reading things, learning things, reading things. But I read things that interest me. I figured out a long time ago that a 15-post message board thread could teach you more than a lot of books. Most books. And I always felt like the thing about books, I'm like, just get to the point. What, 200 pages? To teach what? Bro, if you can't get this down, like, you're not a good author. That's legit how I feel about most books. Most books are not written for the purpose, because this is what you got to realize. Most books are not written for the purpose of actually conveying information. Most books are written to take you on this journey of discovery, of ideas, of nurturing ideas, so that those ideas become your own ideas, right? So books are just another form of communicating, but it's not as though, I don't know. I'm just like, just get to the point of this. I don't know. I don't like reading much. I never enjoy being in the middle of a book. I'm just like, resolve this. I'd much rather watch a movie. I'd much rather listen to something. I listen to a lot of things. Sound is a thing. And it's not that I don't retain information from reading. I do. But y'all are straight up boring with your 200-page books. And look, I'm really lucky because I was born into a time where that wasn't fashionable and I just didn't read. Dude, I did literature class in college. I didn't read any books. I BS'd my way through all of that. I did 2 semesters of African-American literature. I never read one book. I got a D+ in both. I just told my teacher, look, I don't like reading. I don't know if she thought there were cameras around, but I'm a senior in college and I signed up for her second year of literature courses. Why did I do that? It fit my schedule. Legit. I wasn't going to come back to school on Fridays. This was a class I needed. It met on Tuesday and Thursday. I was adding that to my schedule. I wasn't making a whole nother day. I was going to do these classes 4 days a week. I could tell she was, and look, I'm looking at somebody there going, hey, you know this thing that you've devoted your life to studying, literature? I'm not into it. Just not into it. I get that that could be insulting. I didn't mean it that way. I just meant, you do you, boo. You do you. And I'll do me. And me ain't reading this book. Just read me the Cliff Notes. Tell me what the point was. We read a book on systemic racism. There's this allegory in there where this guy who's running away, it's not the Underground Railroad, but he was running away. He was wanted for a crime he didn't commit in the Reconstructionist South. The Reconstruction period in the South, which was highly, highly hostile towards freed black men. And he has this thing where he kind of goes north. I think he gets into Kentucky or something. One of these, I don't think it was a state yet. I don't remember. No, it was a state. Kentucky was a state then for sure. He might have been east of there or west of there. Anyway, it's snowing. It starts snowing. And he gets snowed in. Or he doesn't want to go. He's up in a window and he's trying to secure this window from the snow coming in. And he falls out of the window and he falls into the snow. And when he stands up, he's covered in snow. There's snow on his hands, snow on his head, snow everywhere. And then he's trying to get back in the house and he can't get back in. And the whole allegory of the story, this is just a little picture in the story, but it's an analogy because it was supposed to be that he was in his place of safety, but he fell out and the world all around him was covered in whiteness, right? This is what the snow represented. He fell into this whiteness and then it was covering him. And then he couldn't get it off of him. He couldn't get away from it. It was over the whole world. There was nowhere for him to get back to. And he couldn't get back inside his place of safety because the doors had been locked. This was the allegory. Listen, just tell me that. I think that's a beautiful analogy for what's going on. I get it. I get it. I 100% get it. Please don't drop that little nugget in 250 pages and I've got to go piece it out. Right? Anyway. So my son's read more books than me and he gets to the point that it's all good. He gets to the point that it's all good. And he keeps going forward. Now, but look, now I got a thing that now he's learning from home. They're sending home books. Listen, is what they're sending home worth the tuition? Or could I go pay 1 month's tuition and get a year's worth of stuff and finish up his schooling? I could do that. I could say to the school, hey, we're not going back to school for the rest of the year, which we're not, by the way. I think most of you have realized that by now, but man, I was saying that in early March. Not because I'm so intelligent. I think you knew that too. You just didn't want to believe it. Oh, we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the stuff that people are believing that doesn't make any sense at all. Chaos to order, my friends. Chaos to order. So I got this. What do I do about the school? I believe in the school and I want my kids to go back to the school. So we got 2 months of tuition left. Do I pay it? They've said this to us. They've said, hey, we know that your kids are in your house and we know that you have to take a huge amount of energy to continue your kids' education. We're sending home work. And what we're doing at the school right now is they send home a week's worth of work. Then we drive to the school and we drop it off in this little box and everything's Ziploc bagged. And then they give it to us in this Ziploc bag. And you go to the school and it's completely empty. It's a ghost town. You know, we're just dropping off this bag, picking up a new bag. It's weird. And there's no one there. They just line them up on the benches with the kid's name on it. So I should say to the school, hey, I don't think this is worth the money, so I'm pulling it. And then what? Then what? Then they can't pay the teachers. And then the teachers who are putting in effort, they're doing Zoom calls. But come on, the kids aren't in there every day. It's different, right? They're not providing as much. And I'm not saying they're not trying to provide as much. I'm saying they can't provide as much, right? It's not a value judgment on them. They're not providing as much. They're not taking the kids for hours and hours a day and creating these environments that they've built and stuff. The kids are in our environment. They're in our house and we're bringing the work in. We're basically homeschooling them and we're paying a rate per month That's probably what a good homeschool curriculum would cost for the year. But what should I do? Well, I don't want those teachers to be fired. They took a real stake in my kids, in getting them ready. See, my younger one, who started a year earlier, he just turned 5. He started a year earlier than my older one. So he started at 4. He just turned 5. He'll go into kindergarten next year. He's already reading at a higher level, and he's, you know, we're more than halfway through this year. He'll be reading when he gets to kindergarten. I bet he'll be 75% of the way there to completing kindergarten level reading. So he's going to be way ahead. His math skills already up there. You know, I don't know. Do 4-year-olds usually do addition and subtraction? I don't know. But he just gets it quick. I mean, we didn't even teach it to him. He just like picked it up from his brother. So now we're like, well, we might as well keep going. So anyway, he just turned 5 and I'm explaining multiplication to him, which is something my son is just now getting in the first grade. So I'm encouraged by that. But here's what that means. Here's what I mean by that. So what should I let the school reduce itself to chaos where they have to lay off a bunch of teachers and we should undo this good thing we've built? Or if I can afford it, and look, I can afford it right now because I'm spending no money. The only thing this family buys are the things you see I buy for Tone Junkie. And I'm about to have to start getting rid of some vintage amps. There's ones I'd love to keep in my collection, but we're gonna see what we can do. But I can't, I gotta be cautious. You know, you gotta be cautious, you gotta be careful. Got to be cautious. You got to be careful. You know? Got to be cautious. Got to be careful. And it's just, I don't know, my friends. It's just, you just got to choose who you're going to be every day. You know what I mean? What am I really doing? I'm trying to make sure that my sphere doesn't devolve back into chaos. I'm trying to make sure that we don't abandon the community at the school, that we don't abandon our community at our church, that we don't take out these institutions we believe are important and that we've put in the lives of our children. But at the same time, I have fully retreated from these communities because I recognize that I, as a person, am not responsible for society and its reaction to coronavirus. That is not something that falls within my sphere of influence. The chaos that is in front of me that I can control, the wild thing that I can put a muzzle or a collar on and teach it to be obedient to me, is my exposure to the outside world and the likelihood that my family will contract the coronavirus from our lack of, or not lack thereof, interactions with people. So I can honestly tell you, I don't know anyone else who I believe is less likely to get it than me and my people right now. Now, I want to put this caveat out there, because I just want to speak for a minute, and I'm going to make some statements here that are strong. I 100% recognize there are people who are essential. You cannot control who you run into in your work. You are at a higher risk of exposure. I have a lot of friends working at hospitals and first responders. I've talked to them about this. This is their biggest challenge. They can and to them, it's like this. It's like, I can social distance on the weekends, but you know, if I contract this, I'm likely to spread it to the people I'm treating in the hospitals. If I get it and I don't know it, I'm likely to spread it to the people I'm interacting with as I'm a firefighter or a police officer or whatever. So let me say this. I think people need to understand how much control you have over what you do. You have all the control in the world over what you do. We don't always have control over what's going to happen to us, but we have control over all these things inside our influence, right? So what I mean by that is this. In early March, I took my kids out of school before their school was done. It was a week before their spring break, and I pulled them out of school because I said, they're going to close the schools. This isn't good. I'm concerned about this. I also went and told my neighbor across the street, who's my best friend. I told him, our kids are the same age. He has two girls. I have two boys. He actually has one small baby son now. But his girls and my boys are each within about 6 months of each other. He's my best friend. My wife, our wives are best friends. They're like family. They are my family. Not by blood, but they're family. We eat more meals with them. We have a closer relationship with them than anyone in the world. Outside of our family unit. I went to them and I said, listen, something's not right here. I don't like all this social distancing stuff. This doesn't make sense. We need to completely quarantine ourselves if we don't want to get it. And we had this conversation and we made this conclusion. We said, okay, the recommendations out there that exist are not for individuals. They're for the public. They're to have an effect on the public health, not individuals' health. Meaning, the advice is not meant to tell you how to not get coronavirus. The advice is meant to stop or slow the spread. That's what they always say, right? Slow the spread. It's not called eliminate the spread. It's not called coronavirus proof yourself. And you might not be able to get to 100% guarantee you're not going to get coronavirus. That's probably accurate, right? But we have control over what we do and what we don't do. So I'll give you an example. So I told them, I said, listen, this social distancing thing I get, but I have a different proposal. I'm going to self-quarantine my family. And I'm going to treat this like it's the bubonic plague, like it's the Spanish flu. I'm going to come in contact with almost no one outside of my family unit. Now I need to get food. This is now my biggest challenge. So I need to figure out how to get food in a way that doesn't open me up to getting the coronavirus. Okay, that's the challenge then. How will I get food for my family without contracting the coronavirus? Not how will we social distance? How will I obtain? That is my only concern now. This is the only challenge. Because not seeing people is not a challenge. So I went to this other family and I said this. I said, you guys homeschool. We're about to be homeschooling now because we just pulled our kids out of school. I propose that the nine of us quarantine together so that we can have community, so that we can educate the kids together, and so that we can actually combine our this challenge that's in front of us of how will we obtain food. We can actually limit our chances as the nine of us of contracting the coronavirus at the supermarkets where we have to get food. If one person shops for nine people rather than nine people shopping for one person, we also can conserve the amount of PPE we have. And we also can make sure that the person going, because they're going less, they can focus on not making mistakes. So we can shop together, we can eat together by making larger meals and stuff. And we can basically remove almost all chances that the nine of us contract this disease. And by doing so, we're going to have a good effect on society. Not by social distancing, by completely quarantining ourselves. And I propose we do that as a group of nine rather than a group of four. Mostly for the community aspect, mostly for the mental health aspect. Yesterday we celebrated Easter. I would challenge you to find somebody other than, I don't believe anybody is at less risk of getting this than how we're living right now. I don't say that to be proud. I say that because I see a lot of people who I do not feel are taking responsibility for themselves and the people around them. And then I see a lot of people getting into hysteria and judging people for things that don't make any sense. Like I just saw some people post on Facebook, I can't believe they just had this farmer's market. Why aren't the police there to shut this down? And I go, listen, you idiot. The farmer's market is an outdoor grocery store. Ideally, we would like no one to go anywhere, but starvation will kill you faster than the coronavirus will. The coronavirus will take a week or two. It'll take a week or two to get it, symptoms to set in, then you to get really sick, even if you die fast in like a couple days, right? So, I mean, starvation, I guess it'll probably take like 7 days to starve. I don't really know how long it'll take to starve. My point is, we got to get people food. We all recognize that. We all recognize we got to get people food. So, how do we get people food? Well, I don't see how this open-air grocery store that they've created is any more dangerous than the indoor grocery store, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's very difficult to stay 6 feet apart from people in the grocery store. So, what are we upset that they're doing a farmer's market? Now, one could make this argument. The farmer's market is a pleasant place to go. And you guys know from this podcast, I often enjoy Saturdays at the farmer's market here in Franklin, not anymore. But I go there and we make a day of it and they have ice cream and they have lemonades and there's music and the kids play. Now, they've done away with a lot of that stuff, but you could make the claim that, well, you might bring the whole family because it's nice to get out of the house and it's a little more of a social thing. And it does create an incentive to leave the house and kind of be around people. To which I would say, that's a good point, actually. But my point here is when they tell you a social distance, they're giving you advice for a population, not for yourself. What you should do for yourself is this. You should see nobody. You should not interact outside a group of people you specify. And you need to make sure everybody in that group has zero interaction with outside people. Because then you leave your level, your chance of contraction up to turbulent clouds, up to turbulent gas clouds, which then the virus can travel 26 feet. Because the 6 feet is most droplets. It's like 95 or 96% of the droplets will fall down to the ground within 6 feet. Because it does weigh something, so gravity will pull it down. The turbulent gas cloud, which is these small, small particles that could get caught up in a sneeze or go over here and there and do all these things, these things actually, they think, could go about 20 feet. And they could go over grocery store aisles and stuff. And hey, that's why you wear a mask. You greatly reduce the gas cloud. That's why you sneeze into your hand or into your arm. You greatly reduce it by catching it on something. Rather than let it go free in the air, which has this great dispersion mechanism. So the point that I'm trying to make is you are in charge of what you do. So we send as few people to the grocery store as possible. We try to buy food as infrequently as possible so that we limit our exposure. I donated a bunch of N95 masks to the hospital. I kept 10 for myself. If you think that's wrong, I apologize. But come on. The CDC said, don't worry about wearing masks. Knock it off. I knew that was malarkey. I went, don't wear masks. Masks don't work. That's shut up. Just shut up. I get what's happening. What's happening is you have to say the thing that you need to say to get the result you need. And that is, we don't want people buying masks. So we need to tell them masks are not part of prevention so that hospital workers can get masks. So we donated. We had several hundred masks at work that we had just bought in bulk years ago, and we had a bunch at my dad's company. So we took some for us, and then we just donated the rest. No compensation, no nothing. We don't need to profit. I know some guy, though, who tried to just sell us 400 masks. He's like, hey, do you know where I can sell these 400 masks? Do you want to try to sell them? I have 495 masks. I'm like, bro, come on. Dude came to this country as a refugee, escaping like persecution from a country that is having a huge coronavirus outbreak right now, one in the Middle East. I'm not going to out the guy. Coffee. But dude, I'm just like, bro, come on. Knock that off, man. You got to get that out of here. You got to go donate those. But I kept 10 for myself because I recognize that, okay, I get they don't want us to wear masks because they want to save them for the hospital workers, but I also want to keep my 9 people out of this danger, so I'm going to keep these 9 for myself, and I'm going to send the rest out. So I did. We were wearing gloves and masks in the hospital before it was cool, y'all. You got to look around and think to yourself, okay, I'm responsible for the people in my family unit. What will I do to make sure they don't get this? And I think a lot of people are even using being essential as an excuse. If I was essential and I had to leave the house, I would do what we do for grocery stores. I would take off my shoes in the garage. I would probably wear coveralls or some clothes, and I would disrobe in the garage. I would disrobe in the garage. I would put my items in a plastic bag. I would tie it off, and then I would bring it up to the laundry room, and I'd set it down. And then I would go shower. And then I'd be clean in my home now. And I would have alcohol wipes and disinfect it like I do anytime I leave the grocery store or come out of the grocery store. We disinfect everything again. I'll get into how I do the grocery store in a minute if you want. Maybe you're like, HW, please shut up. Okay. But that's what I would do. I would really go, how would I respond if this thing had a 90% chance of killing me as opposed to a 0.05 or something, or 0.5? I think it's 0.5. I don't remember. What would I do? I'd do it differently, probably than most people are doing it. There's a lackadaisical attitude, man. You want society to not get coronavirus? Then take absolute authority over the people around you. Take responsibility. Just tame the wild things. Create a plan where you will not bring coronavirus into your house. If you sneeze and all the droplets don't go more than 6 feet because they fall to the ground, that means it's on the ground. That means you then step on it, and then you wear your shoes in your house, you bring it onto the floor, and then maybe you have a baby that walks on the floor or puts his hands and mouth on the floor. So don't do that. Right? I go to the grocery store. We wear a mask. We leave everybody outside except for one person. They go in with a list, not their phone. Why? Their phone is a clean item you use all the time, every day. You put it to your mouth. You put it to your hands. You're constantly interacting with your phone. Do not get your phone dirty with coronavirus. Don't plan to get it dirty and then clean your phone. You won't. Put on 2 gloves, do all the shopping with a list that I will throw away, a paper list that we throw away. Put it in the cart, we fill up our cart. When we get to the front, we remove 1 glove, we reach into our clean back pocket or a clean purse, which we have not touched since we put gloves on, right? We reach in, we take out a card, or we now take our clean hand and take our clean phone and use Apple Pay. We place the clean phone or clean wallet back in the clean purse with the clean hand without touching anything dirty. If the screen says, please confirm the amount, we don't. We hold the card in. We pull it out. It says, confirm the amount. I tell the lady, will you please confirm this amount for me? I will not touch this screen. As I put my glove back on. Or maybe I don't put my glove back on. Sometimes I leave that glove off and I have a clean hand and a dirty hand now. And then now I'm going to walk back. I'm going to put my groceries in my car with my gloves, with my dirty hand. And then I'm going to disinfect my hands, right, before I get into the car. And I might at that point, I think it's probably a good idea to remove any sweatshirts or jackets I was wearing. If you got ripaway pants, that makes sense. Put them on before you go in there. Now I took off my dirty layer. Throw it in the car. Go home. Clean as a whistle. But now I don't treat myself like I'm clean as a whistle. Bring in the groceries. Create an area where it's dirty on a countertop. Section it off. Go, this is a dirty area now. Take out each thing and just wipe it down with an alcohol wipe. Wipe down. Here you go. Put it away, honey. Wipe down. Put it away. 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 Wipe down. It's a chain. I wipe everything down. Set it right here on the clean area. She grabs it, puts it in the pantry, puts it in the fridge. We're working together. Keeping this family safe together. Keeping my nine safe together. Keeping society safe together. The wild thing is the uncertainty. The coronavirus is in a turbulent air cloud. It can go 26 feet. It can go on the ground. You track on your shoes. The wild thing is the fear and the resolution that people, or It's the misconception that, oh, so you can't stop yourself. If you're going to get it, you're going to get it. Bullsh. You need to bring order to that chaos in your mind. And you need to say no. If I lived in a world where there was a 95% chance the people I love the most could die if I contracted this thing, then no, I will not let it come in. Wipe down, pass it off, wipe down, pass it off. Now I've got a bunch of dirty bags. What am I going to do? Toss them. Get them out of here. I'm going to gather them up. I'm going to bring them out back outside to the trash. Now, is it dirty? Am I dirty? Now I'm dirty again. Yes. Now I'm going to disrobe and go upstairs. Boom, boom, boom. Clean as a whistle. No one's getting coronavirus here. You get what I'm saying? Think it through. Think it through. What could have been touched by an invisible enemy in the air? And then I'm good. And then we're good. Yes, it's more work. It's more work. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's more work. You know what else is more work? Having a loved one upstairs coughing a bunch because they have the coronavirus and knowing, okay, now it's in my home. Now it pretty much is impossible to not get it. What can you do? Everything. What can you do? Anything. What can you do? Every wise thing. What can you do? More. What can you do? Everything within your power you can do. Hey, what can you do? Can't stop coronavirus? Absolutely, you can. Absolutely. You know what? You can't stop it. It's like you can't stop a crazy person from like running their car off the road and going right through your house. You can't stop a tornado from coming and ripping your life apart. But you can take every precaution. That's all I'm saying. All right, this was supposed to be about gear, and it wasn't. But anyway. I'll try and do some podcasts every day this week if you want. I'll do them every day. That was my coronavirus one. But let's talk about gear now in the second 47 minutes that we have today. Let's start a new one. Let me pause this and start a new one. I'll put them out both today. This will be episode 80. Thanks for listening so much to the Tone Junkie podcast. I'm about to do episode 81 right now. I'll put them out back to back. Back to back.